Oracle. Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, night one of the Democratic National Convention, President Biden caps off a career in public service as Democrats celebrate his legacy at the DNC. We go live to Chicago and speak with Nina Burley, journalist and best-selling author, who's there for her key takeaways from the floor and how local delegates are reacting to night one. Plus, Maggie Fitzpatrick is here to help us move toward health. Today, success through structure. Classical Kit is back with more on the Chandelier Music Festival. And Indigo Girls, they've made their mark as musicians, songwriters, and dedicated activists. And they've represented self-acceptance to many. We speak to Amy Ray of the Indigo Girls. We'll get closer to fine. But first, the news from NPR.
I'm Corva Coleman. Tonight's the second night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Vice President Harris and her running mate Tim Walz will travel briefly to nearby Wisconsin today for a campaign rally. NPR's Asma Khalid has more.
This marks the vice president's third visit to Wisconsin since becoming the Democratic presidential candidate. And it's a sign of the focus Democrats are putting on the so-called blue wall states, that Harris is visiting Milwaukee in the midst of the party's convention. The Harris campaign is billing this as a rally-slash-convention watch party so that Wisconsin voters will get a chance to see the Obama's primetime speeches from Chicago. Wisconsin is a key state for both parties, which is why the Republican vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance, is also in the state today, speaking about crime and safety. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
There were protests outside the Democratic convention yesterday. More than 200 groups gathered to march, primarily to oppose Israel's war in Gaza. During one protest, some marchers breached an outer fence of the convention center. NPR's Martin Costi says that's when Chicago police stepped in.
Compared to Chicago police in 1968 or even 2020, they were pretty restrained. They could have arrested a few dozen people in there for breaching that security zone, but they ended up arresting only a handful, and the police stayed calm while this was happening. Everybody was watching them, of course. The superintendent was right there. But even as protesters were lobbing sticks over the fence and other objects over kind of onto their heads, they were calm.
NPR's Martin Costi reporting. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Israel has accepted a proposed agreement that could lead to a ceasefire in Gaza. He says Hamas must now accept it. Hamas says the latest proposal favors Israel, and one Hamas official says the gaps between the group and Israel have not been bridged. The Israeli military says it has recovered the bodies of six hostages from southern Gaza. The families say the males were kidnapped when Hamas invaded Israel last October, and they died in captivity. Stocks opened mixed this morning as home improvement company Lowe's lowered its sales outlook for the year. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 60 points in early trading.
Lowe's says sales at existing stores fell more than 5% in the most recent quarter compared to the same period a year ago. Do-it-yourselfers have been cautious about undertaking major home improvement projects, although Lowe's says it has seen an uptick in sales to professional contractors. The company hopes to be well-positioned when demand rebounds. Lowe's CEO notes disposable income has been growing faster than prices. Stock in Hawaiian Airlines parent company took off today after a proposed merger with Alaska Airlines cleared a regulatory hurdle. The $1.9 billion deal was announced in December. Chinese authorities held key interest rates steady today after cutting rates last month. Stocks fell in Hong Kong and Shanghai.
NPR Scott Horsley. This is NPR. Former New York Republican Congressman George Santos has pleaded guilty to federal fraud charges. He admitted committing campaign fraud, stealing money from donors, and stealing unemployment benefits. Santos will be sentenced next February. Sudan's military government will meet officials from the U.S. and Egypt today in Cairo. It's hoped they'll attend peace talks underway now in Geneva. Fighting between the Sudanese army and a powerful paramilitary group has created the biggest displacement of civilians in the world. NPR's Emmanuel Akinwotu reports millions are near famine.
The Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, have refused to attend the U.S. peace talks in Geneva to bring about an end to the war and increase humanitarian aid. But the military government has agreed to meet US and Egyptian officials in Cairo for discussions intended to address their concerns and their refusal to attend the Geneva talks. Several previous peace talks have failed to end the war. The fighting erupted in April last year between the SAF and the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, fighting for control of the country. RSF officials are attending the talks in Geneva. The war has fueled a catastrophic humanitarian crisis. Emmanuel Akinwotu, NPR News, Lagos.
Russian firefighters are still trying to put out a huge fire at an oil depot in southern Russia. Russia says it was hit 3 days ago by Ukrainian drones. Ukraine says its military advance into Russian territory is giving it a buffer zone, but it is also losing ground in eastern Ukraine to Russian troops who are advancing there. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Oracle. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure is a platform for database, application development, and AI, designed to provide cloud services wherever users need it. Learn more at oracle.com/radio.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Democratic National Convention kicked off Monday in Chicago with party members rallying around Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's choice in November after incumbent President Joe Biden dropped his reelection bid. 2016 presidential candidate Hillary Clinton was one of the headline speakers Monday as the convention got underway. The former Secretary of State and U.S. Senator from New York was the first woman to win the presidential nomination for a major party. Clinton says Vice President Kamala Harris carries on women's fight to make their voices heard and highlighted the similarities in their early careers as attorneys.
Kamala carries with her the hopes of every child she protected, every family she helped, every community she served. So as president, she will always have our backs. And she will be a fighter for us.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul, the first woman to lead the state, said New Yorkers share values of grit, determination, and compassion, with the notable exception of former New Yorker and ex-president Donald Trump.
He wasn't raised with the New York values that I know. He never had to worry about childcare costs or groceries or rent. He never had to worry about anything or anyone but himself.
Let's go live to Chicago and bring in Nina Burley, journalist and best-selling author, documentary producer, and publisher of a Substack on politics called American Freak Show. Her debut novel is Zero Visibility Possible. Also joining us live in studio is culture reporter Valerie Manzi. Nina, you're there. You just met with the New York delegation for breakfast after night one. What's the vibe like? What's the mood like?
Well, Tim, it's euphoric. I think they feel like they've got the wind at their back. Euphoric to the point of, I don't know, the Sullivan County and Delaware County Democratic chairs, two women who worked for Hillary, obviously, in 16, told me that they couldn't count the number of times they were in tears last night listening to the speeches. I think that I don't know how many of your listeners watched the program, but you know, it was pretty strong. I mean, Raskin really knocked it out of the park with his commentary about the great line about asking Vance why he thought there was a vacancy for vice presidency, and then because they tried to kill your predecessor, referring to January 6th. And then AOC was great. I mean, Sean Fain, who I'm going to see, he's the UAW union leader. He's here in Chicago. He spoke last night. He tore his jacket off to show a T-shirt that said Trump is a scab. You know, I think there was just a sense of, as Schumer said today, this morning at this breakfast, there's a feeling here of a kind of a sea change occurring. They're all very optimistic. They have big plans. Schumer was promising to take back the Congress. A rising tide lifting all boats. A lot of euphoria, a lot of energy, And again, I mean, this morning, I think their morning consult reported that the numbers for Harris have ticked up again nationally, so that she has quite a lead over Trump at the moment. So you've got a lot of happy people here in Chicago right now, and the weather's really nice.
Yeah, I was watching from home, and Governor Pritzker was actually talking about how nice the weather was in Chicago. And also Valerie and I were talking that you, even from watching from home, you could feel the energy. I don't know, you know, being there, how are you describing it? I was watching MSNBC, and Alex Wagner was on the floor, and she was calling it emotional confetti.
Oh, really?
Emotional confetti. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good description. I mean, I was just flabbergasted because I've been, you know, I covered the 2016 Cleveland convention where the Republicans nominated Trump. And there was a kind of an energy there, but it was a dark energy, kind of a bitter energy, but an energy for sure. I mean, a scary energy. And then the convention in Philly with Hillary was the last Democratic convention I went to. I would compare this to that one much differently, much different. I think there's a sense of there's a kind of unleashing of excitement about some of these progressive ideas that maybe AOC would have been espousing 4 years ago, and they wouldn't have put her on front and center, you see. And now she was prime time. I mean, you see people, you see there's some criticism of the way they lined them up last night. We're putting Biden at the very end was seen, you know, the Republicans are, you know, criticizing the Democrats. Or this is how you treat your president. Wait until, you know, everybody's asleep on the East Coast. But I think they wanted to highlight, you know, some of these progressive ideas as speakers and to have AOC right there in the middle. She gave this tightly focused and short speech that I thought was really powerful, and then Raskin, who did so much investigating, he worked so hard on the January 6th investigation. He has all of that information at his fingertips, and he really reminded people, I think, that there's so much negative information about Trump. I mean, that we're so kind of used to it, kind of floating around in the ether, you know, the criminal charges, the convictions, the fraud convictions, and the and January 6th, and just how feral and awful that was, and how outrageous it was that a coup was attempted, and we sort of have been living with it for so long, and so I think somehow there's a sense now that like this all can be said in a different way where it really strikes home. And I don't know what the effect of it is on Republicans who might not be super loving Trump, but I think that it's a I think that there's a sense that they will be able to influence some of these swing independent voters.
Okay, Nina Valerie here, and it's so exciting to be speaking to you. I have 2 points. First, I wanted to ask you about Biden's speech.
Well, what do you want to know about it?
What did you think about it?
I thought it was terrific. I thought good. That he, well, for one thing, what is so amazing is that he speaks with such power at this event. And,
yes.
And you know, just thinking back to the debate, and I'm still utterly baffled how he can go from that to this, you know. But I think that he struck the right notes. He's not bitter, you know. The audience, 4 minutes standing ovation, I think, before he spoke. I mean, there's a lot of love for Joe here, and I think that he felt it.
Good. And can you tell us a little bit about what's going on outside the convention center?
Well, okay. So yesterday there was a protest. I didn't see it. I'm going to go over there today and tomorrow. I think there's going to be more, but it was very relatively peaceful. I mean, they only arrested 4 people. There was a little outbreak at some point, but basically the rest of it was peaceful. It was people just walking through the streets. And the city and the state of Illinois have really built in a perimeter around these two convention areas. So the perimeter, you know, nobody can even drive or walk in to certain areas without credentials. It's kind of hardcore, actually. It's a little bit crazy. And one of the delegates, the Sullivan County chairman, was telling me the bus from where they're staying here to this convention center is only like 2 miles away from here, deeper into the city. We're on the lakefront here. And it took them 4 hours to go to 2 miles. I mean, they were just sitting in this horrendous traffic partly because of the protests. But I think I think today they might have their act together a little bit, but it's not quite there. I mean, I would not want to be on one of those buses sitting there for 4 hours. As far as the protests go, tomorrow is the day where they're having what I think is called an unpermitted protest. I might not be using the right terminology, but it's not officially sanctioned by the cops here. So I think tomorrow could be a little dicey. I see also that there are lots of cops on the street. There are lots of, I think Pritzker called out the National Guard. It reminds me a little bit of Cleveland in 16 when there was so much, every expectation of enormous amounts of violence because people were still shocked at Trump's baiting of minorities and so on, that they knew that, you know, that there was going to be. So they had prepared with police battalions from all over the country, and there were more police on the streets there than there were, I swear, more police than protesters. For every protester, there were two cops. I don't know if that's the situation here because I haven't waded into the areas where the protesters are meeting. But what I would say is that I'm seeing on Twitter, I see a few people that I follow who are very pro-Israel posting video of these protesters and saying, first of all, who's paying them? And secondly, look at this. And I would say that to your listeners, you know, that is not the sense that I'm getting here, at least as of now, is that these protests are peaceful. They're not disruptive at all to the proceedings. Now, we'll see what happens tomorrow, but so far, so good.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Nina Burley, journalist and author, best-selling author and documentary producer and a publisher of Substack on politics called American Freak Show. She is live in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention and reporting to us with what's going on after night one.
Okay. I just had a comment about listening to a segment earlier about Republicans for Harris. There's a movement now that everyone is kind of, even in the Republican Party, had it, and putting democracy first. So I just wanted to throw that into the mix.
Well, the convention will feature several Republican leaders who are supporting Harris, including U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, former Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, and the mayor of Mesa, Arizona, John Giles. I wanted to ask you, Nina, about, you know, diversity in the space. And you're just watching on TV when they pan to the crowd. It's a diverse group of people in this coalition.
Absolutely. It's definitely browner than the Milwaukee convention. Let's just say that. People of all races and ethnicities are here. And it feels good. You know, it feels like America.
And a lot of people are comparing this feeling that they have there to the feeling they had in 2008 when President Barack Obama was nominated. He's speaking tonight along with Michelle Obama and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff. Expecting more euphoria tonight?
Well, yeah. I mean, Obama's beloved, obviously, here in Michelle, too. So this is their town. And I'm sure, yeah, it's euphoria. The one thing that's kind of interesting is, and I was talking to one of the delegates from New York City today about how, you know, Harris has been really kind of shy and retiring with the press. And you see the Republicans are making hay of that. But I think it's working to their advantage. I mean, as a journalist, obviously we want to talk to her, we want to know but I think that keeping her kind of away from, you know, as soon as she holds a press conference, they're going to start going after it, picking off things that she says and so on. But if she kind of just stays there smiling, and she has this kind of like, I thought like there's kind of a light in her eyes that at least certainly transfers onto television. It sounds weird, but I could see on the Jumbotron or whatever that there's a look in her eyes that, you know, you just look at her and you think, I can't believe that this person could be president of the United States, because she seems so warm. And like, it's just kind of mind-boggling. And I think a lot of people here are kind of feeling that. But it's interesting that she's not, I think it's a strategic move that she's not giving up a lot. Now we'll see what happens when she gives her speech on the final night.
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, think about it. It's only been a month since she has become the presumptive nominee here, or the nominee now, I guess, officially after the vote, but they'll have the voice vote to have the ceremonial thing. But again, strategic move, keeping that momentum going at the convention. We are talking to Nina Burley, who is there in Chicago. Nina, we'll talk to you again tomorrow for day two. Is that good?
Happy to do it, reporting live for Radio Catskill. I've been wanting to say that all morning. I'm wearing my hat.
I love it.
I know,
we love it. All right, Nina Burley, thanks so much.
She's
the journalist, best-selling author, and the publisher of a Substack on politics called American Freak Show. Her debut novel is Zero Visibility Possible. We'll talk to her tomorrow. Cultural reporter Valerie Manzi, thanks so much for joining us as well. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we talk to Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. This is Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9. Here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Amy Ray and Emily Saliers have been offering life lessons to their fervent fans for nearly four decades as the Indigo Girls, and right now they're kind of having a moment. Since the release of Greta Gerwig's blockbuster Barbie movie last summer, in which the queer duo's classic hit Closer to Fine was prominently featured, to their songs in the recent jukebox musical Glitter and Doom, to today when they're the center of Alexandra Baumbach's documentary Indigo Girls, It's Only Life After All, streaming on Netflix, the Indigo Girls are, well, more than fine. They're teaming up with Melissa Etheridge for a summer tour, which stops at Bethel Woods tomorrow night. I had a chance to chat with Amy Ray yesterday afternoon about the duo's resurgence and endurance. I saw the documentary. I was just going back to refresh my memory on a couple of things on the website. The synopsis on the landing page kind of struck me. A timely look into the obstacles, activism, and life lessons of two queer friends who never expected to make it big. Yet, here we are, 40 years later, and you guys are big, still big, and doing great. How's that feel?
Lucky. Feels lucky. I mean, we're just... It's like I'm hoarse today because I had so much fun singing last night. So that's an example of it. we enjoy it and we keep having like new experiences and rekindling old things and discovering new people. And like, it's kind of like either end of the spectrum. You know, we're big fans of music. So we'll, you know, go see bands that are young and try to recruit some of them to open for us or come on and, you know, sit in and do a song or whatever. And then older friends, you know, like we're touring with Melissa Etheridge right now, you know, like it's, we'll rekindle, you know, collaborations and stuff. And so it's like another, either end of our kind of life, I guess, we're just looking back and looking forward and kind of trying to be where we are, and all of it adds up to just a really rich career of like good times and just playing music and having fun, you know.
It's really evident in the documentary, and you've said that you were clear to the director, Alexandria Bombach, that you wanted that documentary not to be so much about you, but about the community that have gone through these things with you together. And in watching that, it's so evident. You see the joy and you see the passion that your fans have for you. And even folks saying, Indigo Girls saved my life.
Yeah, what do you say to that? You know, like, thank you. And I'm glad that they're still around. I mean, like, if someone says that to me, I'm like, I'm glad you're here. Like, I'm glad that happened. And I look at it as a mystery, because it's not us personally. It's like the whole kind of magic of the music and the gathering and all the people together that add up to someone feeling better about themselves and making it, you know, crossing over and back into a territory where they love themselves enough to stay here and realize they're worthy, you know, of this life. And that's not just us doing that. That's like the whole kit and caboodle of everything that happens in our career and the audience and the songs and, you know, the spirit that moves people and all that. I think, you know, we're just doing our thing and running the spirits through the music and whatever. But people, you know, that say that, I always say, you know, you saved yourself. You need a little catalyst. You know, sometimes people just need, we all need a little catalyst or a little comfort or somebody to tell us that we're worth it, you know? Mm. And sometimes that's the role music can play. You know, I know it does in my life, you know, with other artists. So that's, you know, that's kind of how we, Emily and I both look at that.
Is that also why you may be a little hoarse from last night? You're feeding off that energy of the crowd?
Yeah. Well, we started this tour, and, you know, we always have to rehearse a lot at the beginning of the tour, too. And we didn't rehearse as much as we wanted, so we were rehearsing at sound checks. And then the crowd last night was really big, and, like, up in Maine at a place called Snow Pond. And it was just the most... And we had had a show in Boston the night before that was just like amazing crowd in Maine. And yeah, you oversing sometimes because you're so excited. And that's what happens. So I have a day off tonight. So I'm going to get a lot of sleep and rest my voice. But, and I'll be fine. Because this usually on a fourth day after three shows, I sound like this for the first couple hours anyway. And it's really fun. You know, we sing with Melissa. Melissa sings with us. And we just, the audience is just the greatest audience. It's been a real joy. We haven't played together in 30 years, and so we're just, I don't know, you know, it's a good fun show with a lot of, Melissa's got so many hit songs, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like when you go hear a band, like I remember going to hear the Steve Miller Band once, and I was like, oh my god, I didn't realize they had this many hits. And you just don't remember, right? And she just rolls them out one after another. And he's like, okay, that was it. So it's pretty funny. But we're going to have a blast, you know, playing the rest of these shows. And just, it's fun to do these things together.
You say you hadn't toured for 30 years. How did this tour come about?
You know, we just both said, I think our agents talked and our managers talked. And it was just like, you know, it's time to do this. Like, I don't know why it came up. Actually, I think Russell actually read an interview or listened to an interview that Melissa did with I'm not remembering his name, a really great music journalist that does interviews and podcasts and stuff. And anyway, she was talking about, you know, where she's at in life and what she's doing, and Russell was just like, they need a tour together. So I think he started the ball rolling or something like that. So it came about through just like interest in kind of where she's at in life and where we're at, and they seem to coalesce in a way that means a good matchup right now. And so I think that's kind of what we were looking at.
you guys are traveling across the country. Is there something special about playing at Bethel Woods, the site of the 1969 Woodstock Festival? We're just celebrating the 55th year.
Well, that's what's special. The energy there, you know, is special. And it's beautiful there. That's a great venue. We've played there a couple of times, I think. And I know we played there once. I can't remember if it's twice or once. But it's very exciting to play there, you know, and think about what went on before. So, yeah, that's the energy's still there.
Busy on tour, busy with family, your daughter, Emily's daughter, raising your family. Are you guys working on new music at all?
We're starting to talk about writing. We're starting to write. And Emily's actually working on, she's got one actual musical theater piece show that she's been developing for a while. And it workshopped in New York this past few months. And it's going really well. And I think, you know, the ultimate goal, I guess, is Broadway, obviously. So she's got two or three in the works, and one is actually kind of speeding ahead. So that's very exciting. And I think that's her, you know, she's looking at that as like she's going to pay a lot of attention to that in the next little while, and then on the side be trying to write new songs for Indigo Girls, and then I'll be trying to write for Indigos, but for various solo projects too. And I've got a country band that I've had for 12 years. We're kind of like a southern country rock punk sort of band that we do everything from traditional country to like more like rootsy, bluegrassy influenced music. It's kind of like Americana, I guess, but it's very southern. And that I've been doing for about 12 years, and we have a few records out together, and our last one out like last year, I think. And then I'm creating a live record from some touring that we did this past year. So that I'm going to be working on that while I'm writing for Indigo Girls. So yeah, a lot of good stuff. And we have a tour with Amos Lee in September on the West Coast. And we love him. He's great. We love his music so much. So we're very excited to do that.
Well, you definitely need to rest your voice. There's a lot going on.
Well,
before we go, I wanted to ask you, back to the documentary, the New York Times said that the director, Alexandra, greatly benefited from Ray's archivist instincts. You did hang on to a lot of stuff.
I do. I'm always like saying, you know, grab that from my archives, from the venue or whatever, you know.
Are you still doing it?
I'm archiving. I make sure I take pictures of every situation, and I save all the posters and anything cool from any venue that comes up, or laminates, just stuff to mark our years. And I, you know, video. It's harder with a phone because it's tempting to do everything on your phone. And I used to have I used to bring my camera, my Super 8 camera, my video cameras, you know, just like all my different formats, because they all look different out. But it's so tempting to just bring your phone, you know. So I try to bring my GoPro for at least one tour, and then another format for another tour. Just have different things to choose from. But and like fans still give me stuff. Like they give me videos that they've taken, or we let people tape shows, so they'll give me a tape of the show or whatever, and I just save all of it.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
I appreciate you keeping up the pre-phone days as a child of the 70s and 80s. I respect that. As the angsty closeted teen singing into the speaker to Closer to Fine and all your other great hits, thank you for everything.
Well, God, that's so sweet. Yeah, I know.
You guys are
the time, right?
It was. And then seeing that documentary, it really kind of brings it back. I'm sure you guys are getting to see that and feel that every night on stage. So Amy Ray, Indigo Girls, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for everything that you said. It's very sweet. I appreciate y'all. You're doing what you do. Cool. Very cool.
Very cool. Indigo Girls and Melissa Etheridge play Bethel Woods tomorrow night. We'll take a break, and when we come back, discipline isn't usually fun in the moment, but it creates a deep sense of fulfillment later when we take actions to move closer to the life we want to live. That's what Maggie Fitzpatrick says, and she's helping us move toward health. So let's listen after a break.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
The Democratic National Convention continues tonight in Chicago, where former President Barack Obama is expected to speak. I'm Scott Detrow. Join me for live special coverage from NPR News.
Starting tonight at 9 on Radio Catskill, your NPR station.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. It's out every Tuesday on stands or online, scdemocratonline.com. Or you can hear it right now, a preview in the studio. It's Maggie Fitzpatrick. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we're in the tease here, we're talking about a discipline, success through structure, discipline, structure, stuff we need to move toward health, a critical component of what we're trying to do here. But sometimes it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, your tone already says it all.
Trying to put on a front, but no structure. This is my downfall.
I know.
And a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really hard. But I want you to think about something that maybe has already become so much of a routine that you don't even think about it. Most people, I would say. You probably brush your teeth in the morning. Right?
Yes, yes.
At night?
Yes.
Okay, so what if you didn't?
Oh, that would be gnarly.
But you probably wouldn't feel great.
No,
right?
You wouldn't feel great.
And you might not feel the result like the first time you skipped, right? Yeah. Like maybe if you just skipped like one night, you'd be like, all right, fine, whatever, not a big deal, right? But then if you kept skipping, you probably wouldn't really feel great in your mouth, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And okay. So the rest of our health is kind of similar to that, right? If we can create habits and routines and structures around things, then it will eventually just become part of our normal routine, right? Whether it's water or any of the other things that we talk about. And when you start to skip them, you're not going to notice right away. But then eventually you're going to say, oh my goodness, what happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we can create structure for ourselves, it helps us keep moving on the path that we want to go with actually less resistance than if we don't have that structure, right? Because if you don't have that habit, you don't have that structure, you're fighting yourself every single time. But you're probably not usually fighting yourself to brush your teeth because you've created such a habit out of it, right?
Right.
So if we can create structure around whatever it is that we're focusing on in the moment. So, and I also want to say, like, we can't do everything at once, right? So we got to pick what's most important. But if we can create some sort of structure and routines around that, it actually makes our path a little bit easier.
Well, and one of the things that could be uncomfortable, but is a place that requires a lot of discipline is the area of nutrition when it comes to health. Let's talk a little bit about, like, you know, following a plan and how not following a plan affects you.
Yeah, I use this example because it's the one that is always most front of mind for me. Like, movement's really easy for me. For some people, it might be the opposite. Yeah. But when it comes to food for me, if I don't have, you know, structure for myself, then I end up under eating. Like, I end up just not eating enough or skipping meals or not eating like full meals. And that doesn't make me feel good and it doesn't help me move towards my goals, right? Because when it comes to food, we actually have to eat enough food in order for our bodies to be in a healthy state, right? So just if you just cut your calories, you're probably not going to just like lose weight because your body's going to freak out, right? Unless your calories are starting really high to begin with. So when it comes to nutrition, whether you are trying to eat less or you're trying to eat more, either way, we have to get clear on first that intention, right? So am I trying to eat more? Am I trying to eat less? Am I trying to just like change what's on my plate? What is the goal here, right? And then we have to look at it and say, okay, what sort of like guidelines can I maybe create for myself, right? So for me, some of those things look like vegetables with, I'm going to say every meal. Does it happen every meal? No, but I have that guideline. So it happens more often than it doesn't, right? Protein, at least 20 grams of protein. Do I hit that every single meal? No, but I have that guideline, so I'm closer than I would be otherwise, right? And then for me, the other thing that's really important is the order in which I eat my food. And so I always eat like vegetables first, protein second, carbohydrates third, because it helps with blood sugar balance and management. And that's something that's really important to me right now. And so though that's the structure that I create for myself. Does it mean that I'm going to be 100% perfect? No, but it means I'm going to be closer to that than the other.
Closer to fine, I would say.
Yeah, exactly.
I love what you said here in this column. It kind of made me smile. My default standard of nutrition is enough to keep me alive.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. And you probably wouldn't think that, right? We have all these conversations. You're like, oh, she probably has it all together. Like, she probably always does it perfectly. It's like, no, I have to create like almost rules for myself because, I don't do it perfectly. I don't, you know, so yeah. You have to do that.
Well, it's good to know that you're human as well.
I am human.
We appreciate that. You're, you know, it is tempting to kind of forget the structure because it feels like a lot. But again, if you don't have the structure, you're going to have this like sort of, you know, feeling of chaos or just being, you know, out in the wind blowing around.
Yeah. So here's the relationship, right? The more structure we create for ourselves, the easier the road actually is, which creates more fulfillment and happiness and ease, right? The less structure we have, the more chaos is created, the more challenging it is in the future. So I think we've talked about this concept before, but I like this concept of like choose your hard, right? Are you going to choose the hard thing right now to make it easier later? Or are you going to choose the easy thing right now, which would be no structure, and make it really hard on yourself later, right? And I always want to err on choose the hard thing now.
Well, and you also mentioned here in the column that if you feel stress in the moment of trying to create this discipline, that's not going to last very long.
Yes.
Because it's going to lead to a sense of freedom and accomplishment.
Exactly. It's a temporary pain, right, that will go away, just like any emotion, really. It's temporary and it will go away if we allow ourselves to actually feel it, right? This is kind of similar to that. And if we avoid it, if we avoid the structure, we avoid that challenge in the moment, then that challenge will come back later and it will be a lot bigger and a lot more difficult to deal with.
And you know what? It's only life after all. Okay, I'll stop.
Okay.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. It's out every Tuesday. You can read it in the paper or you can go online, scdemocratonline.com. Maggie, thank you so much for reminding us to have a little structure and also be kind to ourselves as we're trying to do it.
Anytime.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, Classical Kit is here. The Chandelier Music Festival is continuing, and she'll have an update and a conversation with Ilian Ilias right after this. This is Radio Chatsco.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Hi, Daryl Brogdon here, host of the Retro Cocktail Hour, inviting you to join me for the music that's always served up shaken, not stirred. Whether it's TV crime jazz or tiki tunes, space age bachelor pad music, swinging soundtracks, or other incredibly strange music, it's on the Retro Cocktail Hour. We're on the air every week on Radio Catskill.
Wednesday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Chandelier Music Festival is celebrating its 31st season of presenting internationally renowned classical artists from around the world. And our own Classical Kit is here with the latest. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm heading there later tonight for Dan Arnaz and Paul Staroba's chamber music concert. And I'll be returning Saturday night for the festival finale, which is a return engagement by Brazilian jazz pianist and vocalist Ilian Ilias, who has received many Grammy nominations for her work, along with, she'll be there with the great bassist Mark Johnson, He was a member of the Bill Evans Trio. He collaborated with Stan Getz, Jack DeJohnette, John Lewis, many, many others. So they've been touring most of the summer, but now they're back in New York, and they're coming up to Chandelier for an evening of jazz. And I had the pleasure of speaking with Iliani one morning last week. So let's hear some of that conversation. Good morning, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yes, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Iliani, you recently released Time and Again, which I think might be at least your 30th album, maybe your 31st or more.
Yes, you're right. I'm losing count, but I think it is the 32nd, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Okay. And, you know, unlike some of the ones that have highlighted the work of both Brazilian and American greats like Jobim and Gilbert and Getz and Baker, the songs on Time and Again are all originals, composed by you with composer and bassist Mark Johnson, contributing some of the lyrics. So could you tell us a little bit about this collection of songs and how it came to be?
Yes. Well, these songs are, they come from a very personal musical statement. And I wrote all of the songs, some of the lyrics in English were written together with Mark Johnson. And the stories and the music really travels through time, talking about different times of life, different feelings. And there are some songs that are more introspective. For example, the songs that, like Too Late, brings a little bit of regret, you know, looking back. Or a song like How Many Times, that is more inwards when someone is almost trapped inside of their mind and looking for answers, but being patiently waiting for that. And then there are the songs of joy, songs of romance, and then, you know, different aspects of time and the feelings that we have with the passing of time.
I was listening to the album this morning, and a few of the songs are in Portuguese, which I don't speak, but I can say that the emotion comes through, and that even if you don't know what the words mean, the feeling just comes through so clearly. And I'm really hoping that you and Mark will be sharing some duet arrangements of those songs when you appear at Chandelier.
Oh, yes. Yes, we are. And we do intend to bring some new things from Time and Again. But also, when I perform, I bring in different music that I have recorded throughout my career. So, for example, songs that are from the part of the Bill Evans tribute or the Chet Baker tribute or something from Brazil, like the composers of Brazil. So it's a nice curve where that curve embraces all those different things that I have done.
Well, I'm really excited about the concert. And I have to say you know, I think some of our second homeowners up here who might catch you at Chandelier are going to want to go to Birdland when they get back to the city next month to hear more, because you're going to have a multi-day engagement there.
That's right. And a different presentation. Because it will be a quartet. At Birdland, it will be a quartet.
Oh, okay.
With guitar and with drums. And at Chandelier, we have the, you know, special presentation of piano and bass. I mean, Mark is such a virtuoso, such a wonderful bassist. And the way we communicate, you know, it's a dialogue, the musical dialogue. It's very special.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. You know, one thing I want to ask you that I've been wondering about. So, you know, you've collaborated with so many great musicians over the years, including some of my favorites like Chick Corea and Chucho Valdez. But you began working around great artists when you were very young. I read that when you were still a teenager, you toured with the great Brazilian singer Toquinho and the poet, playwright, and I'm thinking I should just call him a national treasure, Vinicius de Moraes. And I'm wondering, what was that experience like for you as a young girl? And when you were doing that, how did you imagine your future as an artist at that time when you were appearing with them?
Well, those are great questions. Starting with how important it was for me to musically and personally to be sharing 3 years on the road with this amazing artist. Toquinho played the bossa nova and played samba, which is another Brazilian rhythm. And with him, I really developed a way of playing rhythmically on a piano together with guitar, and something that I do in a very personal way all the way until today. I carry this with me. But also, Vinicius de Moraes was the greatest poet and lyricist. I mean, an incredible man. And sharing time with him was his vision of life, but it was also the way he approached lyrics and the way he spoke about them. And that stayed with me and gave me the confidence and the way of developing the words when I write in English or in Portuguese, but having that kind of perspective coming from him. So it was incredibly important. Now, did I know the importance of this back then? Back then, I felt I was fortunate, you know, to be sharing music with them. But as many times happens in life, when we are inside of something, we don't really know until much later how did that impact our lives. And that it was an incredible impact of preparing me for something that I did, you know, over and over again, but much later with my own imprint on it. So it was just fantastic.
Well, and it's such, I don't know, it seems like it was such an essence of the culture of your home country. And to be so, I mean, I'm sure everyone knew that poetry, but to be there while it was happening, to be on the stage with them, I mean, it just, you must just hold that in your heart.
Oh, in my, of course I do. And you know that we would be playing large theaters, but not for a night. We would stay for 3 weeks, let's say, in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, and then 3 weeks in somewhere else. I mean, they were like real, there was a real show, a real presentation. We had lighting people. We had our engineers. We have, you know, it was a beautiful, beautiful presentation. And I, you know, I can't tell you how that made an imprint in me. And I like to use a term like when you go to drink water, instead of getting the bottled water, you drink right from the fountain when it comes out. And that's what happened with me musically. I went and drank from that fountain. You know, the creators of this language was just, you know, just spilled into my life that way. It's just fantastic.
Well, and the way you express that, it's clear that you've absorbed the poet, you know, because you're so expressive with your words as well as with your music. And
thank you
so much for sharing that with me, because, you know, that's something that I just tried to imagine what it would be like, and you've just brought it to life. And then, of course, you know, when you came to America, I'm sure you had a lot of exposure to American jazz in Brazil, because, you know, so many of the great artists there were also listening to that. I mean, it was a two-way street of the influence of Brazilian music on American jazz, and I imagine it was going the other way, too. So, you know, you're in this unique position of being able to share with us both the culture of Brazil and its music and its poetry, but also the greats of American jazz, like, you know, Chet Baker and, Bill Evans and all of them.
Yes, some of these artists were very influential to the bossa nova composers, the way they approached music. It was really influenced from the improvisation, from jazz, and especially the West Coast movement. But I have to say that in my case, my mother played piano, and she was an incredible jazz fan. And we didn't have, in Brazil, access to recordings. We couldn't. They were imports. You couldn't have them. But my father travel to the U.S. for work. And he would bring me suitcases of albums.
Oh, albums.
I had the catalogs, and I would ask him for albums, and he would go after them, order them, and bring to me. So I had jazz around the house more than I would say any American child. An average American child wouldn't hear as much jazz as I did. So that was part of my growing up, and my love for that music was so strong, and the love for improvisation was so strong that at age 10, I would sit by my record player and, you know, hold the needle down and up, and I could transcribe. I could always hear everything, you know, notes and chords. And I identified at a very young age, and I knew how to write music and the divisions of rhythm with math. I was very good with all that. So at age 10, I started doing transcriptions of the jazz pianists that I was impressed by. And I developed, like by the time I was 11 and 12, I was already with a quite vast repertoire of jazz standards, and I could study what did the improvisers play, so I could go into that vein and develop my own. And so that love and the intention of playing jazz stayed with me to a point that when Vinicius de Moraes passed away, after the 3 years I worked with him and Toquinho, and I met Jobim and all of that, I moved to New York because that's what I always wanted to do. I wanted to be in New York and play with the great jazz musicians that I was hearing on my record player my whole life.
Oh, well, you certainly made your dream come true, and now you're going to be bringing that to Chandelier, and I'm just, I appreciate so much that you are coming here, and, you know, I'm gonna go out on the interview with a selection from Time and Again, so I'm wondering if you could tell me what would be a favorite. Well, not that you would have a favorite. It's like we won't say we have a favorite child, but is there one song that you think you would choose for me to end with today?
What about, I'll make a suggestion. What about the opening track, At First Sight?
Okay, well, I will do that then. And thank you so much for joining me this morning. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. I really look forward to being there. And Daniel Straub and I are friends forever. I mean, we know each other for almost 40 years. And it's amazing to be there and to be with him and be a part of this beautiful festival.
Well, thank you again. And you have a wonderful day. And
you too.
I'll look forward to hearing you play. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
When the light of dawn is breaking, from the dream of you awaking, stars shining in the daylight, can it be true love at first sight?
Oh, so that is the sound of Ilion Ilias, who will be at Chandelier Saturday night at 8. And Tim, I just realized that the performance Friday night at 8 of Amanda Breckert's duo.
Yeah.
That's Ilion's daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't realize that until just now.
Wow.
So,
this is great. I could listen to this all day.
Yeah.
All night at the Chandelier Music Festival.
Yeah. It's just a lovely, upbeat thing. It makes put a smile on your face.
Thank you for putting a smile on our face with that interview, for coming in to talk to us about the Chandelier Music Festival. We'll see you soon.
You're very welcome.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Like a potion, like a mystery, in a moment of eternity, when you held me in your arms to say, at first.
first sight, our love was meant to be.
Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to have a conversation with One Small Step, bringing people with different political beliefs together to simply talk about their lives. Apply today at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. Listen on air, live streaming at WJFFradio.org, or ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill.